welcome everybody to the 25 Live, the first episode actually. And I am Jim Bernica with the Firefighter Cancer Consultants, and my special guest here is Jen Keir. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
I did say that right.
Well done.
She's all the way from Ottawa, so I'm even happy that I can understand her at this point, I think.
Such an American.
All right. And you just got back, was it yesterday, from your trip? Speaking of Americans and trips and everywhere else, where were you at?
I got back Friday. Okay. And then immediately went to a wedding 4 hours away. But Friday I got back to the country. So I was in Denmark and Sweden for the past 3 weeks. And I was meeting with our collaborators at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark. And talking about some of the methods that we're working on together, trying to develop some new things, some new applications that we can use for the firefighter studies that we're doing. And also learned about their other coworkers, what they're working on. They have some really amazing science going on there, not related to firefighters, but just in general, and toxins and exposures. So that was great. And then I went over to Umeå, Sweden, and met with Swedish National Defense. I forget the actual acronym, but and then again, we talked about, they've done a firefighter study before, so we talked with them about their studies and some of the methods that they use to look at firefighters' exposures and the effects of their exposures. So we talked about methods and what we're using and what they're using and how we can apply them in the future. So it was just a beautifully nerdy couple weeks, and I got so much from it. It's one thing that I'm really passionate about with science is sharing your science with other people so that you can improve it together. And what someone's working on, if that's really novel, well, then how can we apply this in other applications and improve science and not just keep doing the same thing over and over again?
That's absolutely great. I know I kind of feel the same way as far as the science, because I'm not a scientist, but just seeing what everybody else is doing. And then, you know, if they're doing something that could be beneficial, then trying to actually bring that to everybody else and implementing that.
Exactly. And I think, but communication of that is so hard. Some people don't want to communicate it or don't know how to communicate it or how to get the message out to other people and say, this is what we're doing. What do you think of that? And what are you guys doing? And kind of not criticize each other, but, you know, think critically about what each other are doing and take the good stuff and then discuss the bad stuff.
Nice. That's exactly. Let me ask you this. Did you have any cool food there? Any food that kind of sticks out to you when you're in Sweden?
Well, we ate reindeer, which was actually super good.
Reindeer? Does Santa know?
I know. I felt awful. I told that to my brother, and he is an 8-month-old baby, and he goes, how could you do that?
You could just, that's the automatic naughty list.
I know. Well, I've given up on that. So, but yeah, the reindeer was really good. I'm trying to think, just a lot of Danishes, got real fat, but totally worth it.
I was in Sweden at this point, about 2.5 years ago, probably. And what sticks out of mind, because it just, to me, it's hilarious. Like, they offered me a snack when I was there, and I thought it was odd that it was actually Swedish fish that they gave me.
This is a little candy.
The candy, like, I'm in Sweden, I'm eating Swedish fish. They should have just called it fish.
Yeah.
But I remember the first piece I tried, I was like, oh, it's a dark one. I'm like, oh, what's this? And I was thinking it's going to be like some crazy, like, chocolate fish or something. And it was black licorice, and it was absolutely disgusting. And I told the guys, I said, this would never get past customs. That's why I've never tasted this flavor. It's not in the U.S.
Yeah, that's one thing. I know salted licorice is a big thing there, but I didn't even bother. I'm not going to waste it. But speaking of customs, trying to get dried reindeer meat through customs was surprisingly easy.
Good for you. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I could use your help, because I know I'm going back up to Canada twice later this fall.
Oh, well, we don't have dried reindeer meat here, so I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, fair enough. I should have said, I should have gave you the actual proper introduction from the start. I just jumped right into the vacation and the stories. It wasn't a vacation. It was a workcation.
Well, it was a bit of vacation.
So you actually are with the University of Ottawa.
Correct.
How long have you been there?
About 4 years, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, 4 years.
Very cool. And this, how did you get involved with, you know, being interested in firefighters to begin with and studying them and trying to help us out?
Yeah, it's kind of just happened, to be honest. So I did a degree in health science. So a lot of it was about social determinants of health and factors that affect your health, which was really interesting, but it wasn't sciencey enough for me. So then I went back and I did a chemistry degree, but then that was too sciencey because that was quantum physics and calculus and all that. And it was too much. I finished it and I loved it.
That's my favorite stuff. It's my favorite.
But I didn't want to do that the rest of my life. I'm just, no, I can't. But toxicology is always something I really wanted to do. I just didn't really know how to do it. So when I finished those two degrees, I started looking around for someone, for a supervisor in a university to do grad school at. I knew I wanted to do my master's at least. So I emailed a whole bunch of profs all across the country and just trying to find someone who did something that involved human exposures to chemicals. So I emailed a professor here at the University of Ottawa, who I'm now working with, Dr. Jules Blay, as well as Paul White at Health Canada. And they had just gotten funding to do the firefighter study that we ended up doing together. And it was kind of just funny timing, funny in an unfortunate way, but my uncles were all firefighters, and the one was actually going through cancer treatment at the time. And they had thought that at one point that it may have been related to being a firefighter. So then once I got this email back about this opportunity to do a study with firefighters, at the same time my uncle was going through that, it was just perfect timing. And he's fine now. He went through all the treatment and he's in remission, so that's great. And yeah, now I've met so many firefighters within the community, and my husband to be, his whole family, they have a whole bunch of firefighters. So his uncle is the assistant fire chief in the town we live in. So I've really been sucked into the firefighter community, but I love it.
Nice, nice. Well, we're glad to have you. What were some of those results that came out of that first study that you ended up doing?
So we looked at firefighters' exposures during emergency fire suppression. So a lot of the previous studies have all been done at training fires, but we wanted to look at what happens during emergency fires. So we found that there's surprisingly significant deposition of chemicals, not only on the skin and on the bunker gear, but also what was getting underneath as well. So on the clothing of whatever they were wearing underneath their bunker gear. Some of the air results, so we took air samples from the emergency fires. They, not surprisingly, but they were above occupational exposure limits. And we looked at urinary biomarkers of exposure, so we saw significant exposures through that as well. So it was just nice to get a snapshot of firefighters' exposures during real-life fires, where you have a house fire or a container fire or whatever's on fire, versus a training fire, which is usually just wood pallets.
Sure. Very nice. I don't know, were you surprised with your findings out of everything? What did you think going into that you were going to see compared to what actually came out? Let me ask you that, how that way.
I think we knew, well, we didn't know, but we thought that we would see exposures because just of the environment that firefighters are put in. But I don't know if we realized that it would be that much of an exposure, that we would see the level of urinary metabolites coming out after a fire compared to before. So that was really surprising. Another surprising result was the link between how much specifically PAHs or polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, the concentration of PAHs on skin and how it linked to what was coming out in the urine as well. So that really provided an idea or a suggestion that a lot of this exposure is coming through the skin, because if you don't know much about firefighters, which was me when I was starting out, you just assume that it's respiratory exposure, that you'd breathe in smoke and that's where all your exposure would come from. But assuming that you're properly wearing your SCBA at the proper times and for the proper length of time, That shouldn't really be a significant issue. But now, so now that we see that link between skin and what's coming out in urine, we're leaning towards thinking that dermal exposure is what we should be focusing on moving ahead.
Very interesting. Yeah, I thought the same thing when I started, that inhalation was going to be the big factor. And then I remember talking to Dr. Stuart Baxter from the University of Cincinnati. He was part of the white paper. We were both involved in that, going back to August 2013. And he was really big on the absorption. And then I don't think we really realized how all this stuff is getting onto our skin until just a couple of years ago with that, the fluorescent aerosol screening test, FAST test for short.
Yeah, exactly.
That Jeff Stahl did, and we were finally able to visualize, oh, look at all the stuff where it's getting on our skin. And knowing also, Doctor, I don't know if you were kind of using the same scale that Dr. Baxter used, but, you know, knowing that 300% increase for scrotum, or 300% more absorbent for the scrotum area, our neck and jawline was, you know, 93%. So, yeah, it's definitely a big deal. It's a big worry. I think we have, as a fire culture over the years, I've noticed that we're definitely wearing our air more. In some places, more than less. But overall, people are keeping their packs on longer. So, but that's, you know, the reality of it is, with the gear we have, we're going to get exposed regardless. Mm-hmm. So that's a whole nother subject about how, you know, changing the gear just from the bottom up to limit that. But so let me ask you this. After the results came out and we kind of find out what the problem is, you've been currently working on ways to try to mitigate that risk. Is that correct?
Yeah. So now we're working on, we have another study that's ongoing now. So I'm just in the process of collecting and processing some of the samples. So we're looking at ways to decontaminate after a fire. So once you're exposed, what's the best way to get these compounds off of your skin to hopefully reduce any residual absorption that could happen? So if you have contaminants on your skin, the idea is the faster you can get them off, the less time they have to absorb into your skin. So that's one way to look at it. On the other side, it's another way to reduce cross-contamination. So if we can clean off your skin, say on scene with soap and water or a wipe or whatever, then you're less likely to cross-contaminate it when you go and sit on a chair during rehab, or when you go back into the truck, or when you get back to the station before you shower and things like that. So it's kind of twofold. It's very preliminary at the moment. I mean, a lot of people have ideas of what's the best way to reduce this dermal absorption of these compounds.
Sure.
But the fact of the matter is, we just don't know. So people are trying great things, which is wonderful, but science-wise, we're kind of behind that. But there are a lot of great studies going on. I know I'm not the only one who's looking at ways to reduce these exposures through the skin. So hopefully in the next couple years or a year or so, we'll have a better idea of what's the best way to reduce that route of exposure.
Sure. This whole firefighter cancer epidemic, I'm so thankful with all the money and the time that's being actually put into it now. You know, this was a pretty unknown problem just going back 10 years ago. And now all of a sudden there's all sorts of different studies in Canada, throughout the world really, that are, you know, figuring out what the problem is and then trying to also figure out something to do to help with all these issues. So I don't know. I appreciate you being involved and your whole team trying to figure stuff out. And I know that, you know, being where I've been, where it's, you're in Canada, I've been in England, I've been in Sweden, and here, of course, in the U.S., everybody does a job a little bit differently, but when it comes down to it, it's all kind of the same. So everything you're doing now will benefit everybody. That's the cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it'll be great. And one thing with that, just the change of the last 10 years, it's so interesting to talk to people who have been firefighters for 20, 30 years, or even the retired firefighters. The stories that come of it are just absolutely wild. You think, when SCBAs came out, nobody wanted to wear it. Sure. Whereas nowadays, how absurd is that? Or at least it's absurd in my mind to think that you wouldn't want to wear it.
All right. So if you think about it, back in the days, there was EMS workers. They didn't wear gloves. They didn't wear BSI. So, you know, they'd go on these runs and be covered in blood, and that was a badge of honor. And we look at those guys today and go, they're crazy. And the fire service, that soot, you know, the dirty helmet, the dirty gear, that's been a badge of honor. And that is slowly starting to become just like blood, you know, like why, you know, what's going on there? You know, clean is the new badge of honor. So we're slowly getting there, but it's certainly been a process. But I really wanted to thank you for actually being part of this. I'm excited that you're actually coming to us here in October. You're going to be part of the Firefighter Health and Wellness Conference in Beaver Creek, Ohio on October 24th is when you get to kind of let everybody else know what you've been, you know, what you've done and what you also are working on. So I'm excited that you get to be part of that, you know, for here and actually kind of see me in my hometown, and I'll give you some Swedish fish or something like that. I don't know.
Me too. I'm looking forward to it. And thank you. Thank you for having me on here.
Oh, absolutely. No, we'll do some kind of Dayton area, foods and stuff like that. You know, we've got great pizza.
Ooh, very exotic. Ooh, wow.
I know. Well, no, we don't have anything fancy. I think our fanciest thing from the area would be like chili and spaghetti, you know, Cincinnati chili.
Oh, okay.
You ever had that? Have you ever had a Skyline or Coney or Coney's or anything like that?
I don't know what that means, so probably not.
No, it's like spaghetti, and then you have this chili on there, but it's not like chili, like, you know, a bunch of beans and all that kind of stuff. It's more of like a, almost like a sauce, and you throw a whole bag of cheese on top of there, onions, maybe some mustard. You know, you can have it a three-way, a four-way, a five-way. Each thing you add, it makes, adds it a different way. So that's something we could do. I know if I came to your town, what would you try to feed me? Let me ask you that. We'll part on that.
Well, we'd start off with a beaver tail, which isn't an actual beaver tail. It's fried dough with cinnamon and sugar on top. So we'd start off with a beaver tail. Then we'd probably go for some of my hometown's homegrown maple syrup. Perhaps go to a sugar shack where you sit there and you boil down maple syrup and you drink all day. Well, drinking is optional, but highly recommended.
It sounds like this is very anti-keto.
Yes, very anti-keto. Keto sounds like no fun. I don't know what else is Canadian. Maybe go hunt a moose or something.
That'd be cool.
Yeah,
I spent a few weeks there earlier in the year, and I didn't see any. I was looking. I didn't see any.
Okay, but you were also in the prairies, weren't you?
Yeah, that's Saskatchewan.
Yeah, that's the prairies. Yeah,
the saying was there, like, your dog could leave. I think you told me this, actually. You were the first one.
You can watch your dog run away for 4 days because it's so flat.
Yes. And that was very accurate.
Yeah, right?
All right. Anyway, I will let you go. Thanks again. I'm looking forward to see you now, just, I don't know, 100 days from now or so, I think. So yep. I'll make sure to show you a good time.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks again for having me.
No, thanks. And take care.
Yep. You too.
Bye.